Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter Jr., Pete Musto, and Anna Mateo. Later, Ashley and I will bring you the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
A new report lists the United States among the 5 most innovative economies in the world. Switzerland was the top-rated country on the list, known as the Global Innovation Index 2019. It is followed by Sweden, the U.S., the Netherlands, and Britain. United Nations officials released the findings. The index is a project of the UN World Intellectual Property Organization, the business school INSEAD, and Cornell University in New York. The report notes, innovation is blossoming around the world. Although concerns about an economic slowdown and trade disputes continue, researchers used 80 economic measures to arrive at the final ratings. These included traditional measures like investment in research and development, as well as the number of international patents and trademarks sought. More modern measures include the number of mobile phone applications and high-technology exports produced. The researchers considered different industries within each economy. The new report also has a special area on medical innovation. It describes artificial intelligence, genomics, and mobile health applications as areas that will change the way healthcare is provided for rich and developing nations. The report studied the amount of money that businesses spend on research and development and compared it to government spending. It found that in 2017, governments increased research and development spending by about 5%, while businesses increased spending by 6.7%. Never in history have so many scientists worldwide labored at solving the most pressing global challenges, the report said. On the list of 129 economies, China appears in 14th place, moving up from 17th place a year ago. The report praises China as a country in the group of leading innovative nations. The reasons, the report said, included China being a top producer of patents, industrial designs, and trademarks. China also has many high-tech exports and creative goods exports, it added. The United States rose from 6th place overall last year to 3rd. The index rated the U.S. first for the openness of its markets and credit availability. It also ranked highly in patents and spending growth. Some countries' innovations outperformed others for the size of their economies. Among the top outperformers were India, Vietnam, Kenya, and Moldova. India is number 52 on the new list and ranked as the most innovative economy in Central and South Asia. But many countries still do not have strong innovation in their economies. The bottom 10 countries in the index are Nicaragua, Madagascar, Zimbabwe, Benin, Zambia, Guinea, Togo, Niger, Burundi, and Yemen. The report identified two issues that could slow growth in innovation in healthcare and other industries. The first was slow spending in research and development by public organizations. The report said this was especially the case with high-income countries. It warned that because research and development drive technology, industries like healthcare could be affected. The other issue was protectionism affecting the technology industry. The report said that efforts to place trade barriers hurting technology-intensive industries and limits to knowledge flows present risks to innovation around the world. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Every year, hundreds of thousands of young people enter higher education for the first time. So it might seem easy for new students to make friends, right? Not always. College official Matt Couch admits that life at a college or university can be lonely sometimes. Couch is Associate Dean of Students at The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Couch notes that many students, especially new ones, face a number of difficulties ahead of them. High school academics are usually less demanding than those at a college or university. So, high school students are likely to have succeeded with less effort than they will need in college, he says. Most students have strong connections to their homes and the people they grew up with, he adds. These issues are often combined with natural feelings of homesickness. If they don't find someone that they connect with right away, that can lead to all kinds of issues, Couch told VOA. But at most college campuses, there's a life outside the classroom that's really vibrant, and there are going to be people that share a common interest. It's just a matter of finding them. Couch says the answer is joining student organizations. Almost every college and university in the United States supports a community of these groups to help students find other people with whom they can connect. Ohio State has around 1,400. These groups can be based around almost any interest, like watching movies or creative writing. The ones that are less serious do serve the purpose of helping students meet people who enjoy the same things as them. For example, at one point, the largest group at Ohio State was built around enjoying the kind of food known as barbecue. Couch suggests that those new friends can become the support system a student is missing back home. But he also notes that the ones centered on a field of study can be even more helpful to students. Research has shown that involvement in these groups helps students' academic performance and makes them more likely to graduate. If an economics student joins a student-run economics group, he or she will meet on a usual basis with other students to discuss economics. Their group will likely invite experts in the field to their school to give presentations, or they might make trips to economics-linked events. In short, Couch notes, they are taking what they are learning in the classroom and making use of it in the real world. And that can be helpful later in life. When you're involved, that's going to give you experiences that you can draw upon for problem solving and for relating to other people, he said. And I think that employers are more interested in students who have an extra dimension to their college experience. Couch urges students who cannot find a student group on their campus that interests them not to worry. Most colleges and universities make it fairly easy for students to start their own groups. Usually, there are rules governing the structure of those groups. For example, most schools require groups to meet a membership level. Also, most groups must have a professor or other school employee to act as an accountable advisor. Getting official approval as a group has some benefits. Often, these groups receive financial support and services from the university. Even if there is already an existing group that is somewhat similar to a student's interests, that does not mean they cannot make their own group, Couch says. Schools often have rules against making more than one of the exact same group. But administrators often approve the creation of groups that serve a smaller population, such as female African American engineers, as opposed to engineers in general. That is because, especially at larger colleges and universities, it can be harder for those people to find others sharing their exact experiences. Couch argues that no matter what, students should join some kind of campus group, because he cannot imagine a complete college experience without them. It's pretty rare in a person's life to be in a community that has that much organization around diverse ideas, he said. And it could really be the best opportunity you'll ever have to get some exposure to a new culture or new political ideas or to do service. I'm Pete Musto.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On today's show, we talk about something found all over the world. The fly. When you spend time outdoors in nice weather, you usually come across a fly, or two, or many. Flies perform an important job in nature. They break down a lot of organic materials. Plus, farmers can use their larvae as very cheap food sources for animals. So those are really good things, but let's be honest. flies are annoying. They fly around our heads. They lay eggs in our trash and leave germs in our food. And they can spread disease. They are so common that we often do not notice them. Once inside a building, they stick to the walls and seemingly watch the goings-on around them, secretly. And that brings us to today's expression, to be a fly on the wall. A fly on the wall is a person who observes a situation without being noticed or without interfering. This expression has appeared in different forms in many old stories. Take, for example, some lines from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet from the late 1590s. The language does not take the exact form of the expression fly on the wall. However, some experts suggest that the meaning of the expression is there. And so the expression as we know it today began to take shape. Okay, here is the setup. Romeo wants to see Juliet's lovely hand and kiss her soft red lips. But he can't. He is banished. The flies, however, are free. They can get as close as they want to Juliet. And Romeo sounds a bit upset about that. Now let's hear that selection from an 1821 version of Romeo and Juliet.
Still blush, as thinking their own kisses sin. But Romeo may not. He is banished. Flies may do this, when I from this must fly. They are free men, but I am banished.
Today, fly on the wall remains a commonly used phrase. When you are a fly on the wall, you are eavesdropping. You are listening in. You are a bystander, a witness, and sometimes a spy. As an adjective, fly on the wall describes a style of filmmaking. Filmmakers and videographers often use the fly-on-the-wall method for reality shows and documentaries. The filmmakers tell the subjects to ignore the cameras and filming crew. Even if the camera is clearly visible, the film subjects usually get used to the cameras and forget they are there. Now let's listen to this conversation between two roommates.
I am so happy it's Friday.
Hey, do you want to see a documentary that just came out? It's playing at the movie theater near our apartment.
Sure. What's it about?
It's a documentary about the lives of elephants. The filmmakers used really small cameras and shot it fly-on-the-wall style. So you really feel like you're just hanging out with the elephants.
Sounds great. I love elephants.
Me too.
Elephants!
And that's all the time we have today. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Our National Parks journey continues with one of the most popular and beautiful places in America, Grand Canyon National Park in the state of Arizona. The Grand Canyon is one of the seven natural wonders of the world and one of the largest canyons on Earth. It stretches for 450 kilometers. Parts of the canyon are more than 30 kilometers wide and 1 kilometer deep. many writers have tried to describe the wonder of the Grand Canyon. They use words like mysterious, overpowering, and strange. But it is not possible to put human meaning to such a place. The Grand Canyon truly is beyond words.
Is this your first time at the Grand Canyon?
Yes.
And what do you think? Do you have a few words to describe it?
Beautiful. Amazing.
What do you think of the Grand Canyon?
Oh, very huge and very colorful.
Do you have some words to describe what you're seeing?
Amazing. It's so amazing when I see it at the first look.
The canyons of America's Southwest are deep, ancient openings in the earth. They look as if they formed as the earth split apart. In reality, rivers formed these canyons. 40 million years ago, the Colorado River began cutting through the area around the present-day Grand Canyon. The river carried dirt and pieces of stone that slowly ate away at the surrounding rock. It left a pathway of enormous rock openings. At the same time, forces deep within the earth pushed up the surrounding land. Rain, snow, ice, wind, and plant roots rubbed away at the top of this new canyon. Below, the river continued to uncover more and more levels of ancient rock. Some of the exposed rocks along the Grand Canyon's walls are nearly 2 billion years old. They are among the oldest rocks on Earth, with many levels of granite, schist, limestone, and sandstone.
The Grand Canyon measures 2,500 meters from the canyon floor to its highest point. Because of its size, the weather at the top of the canyon is often much different from the bottom. On some winter days, for example, you may find cold winds and snow at the top. But at the bottom of the canyon, you may find warm winds and flowers. The Grand Canyon is home to some 2,000 plant species. Some of these species can only be found in the park. The park is also home to more than 370 species of birds, 90 kinds of mammals, and 40 kinds of reptiles. Many of the birds spend their whole lives in the Grand Canyon. Other species depend on the Grand Canyon for food and shelter during large migrations. The Grand Canyon was named a globally important bird area in 2014 because of the role it plays in protecting many species of birds.
Native Americans occupied the Grand Canyon 3,000 years ago. Bones, hair, feathers, and the remains of plants have been found in deep, dry caves high in the rock walls. The Hopi, Paiute, Navajo, and other Native American tribes have all been in the area for at least 700 years. In 1869, American John Wesley Powell explored the Grand Canyon. He recorded much of what we know today about the area. Powell and his group traveled in 4 boats along the Colorado River. He and his group of explorers knew very little about getting over the fast, rocky waters of the Colorado River. In many places, boats could be turned over by giant waves. Soon after they started their journey, Powell's group lost some of its food and equipment. 3 members decided to leave the group. As they walked up and out of the Grand Canyon, they were killed by Native Americans. The rest of Powell's group survived the journey. Starved and tired, Powell and his group reached the end of the canyon. They had traveled by boat down the Colorado for more than 3 months. John Wesley Powell's reports and maps from the trip greatly increased interest in the Grand Canyon. But visitors did not begin to go there in large numbers until 1901. That year, a railway was built that reached the area.
Five million people visit the Grand Canyon every year. The first sight of the canyon can leave visitors speechless. Depending on the time of day, the sun lights up the rock walls in red, orange, and golden colors. The bright colors are the result of minerals in the rock. Their appearance changes endlessly with the light, the time of year, and the weather. At sunset, the canyon walls display fiery red and gold hues. Then they take on softer colors of blue, purple, and green. Most visitors walk along paths part way down the canyon. It takes several hours to walk to the bottom and even longer to climb back up. Some visitors choose to ride mules to the bottom of the canyon. Mules are strong, sturdy animals that look similar to horses. Visitors can also explore the Grand Canyon in other ways. Hundreds of thousands of people see the canyon by air each year. They pay a helicopter or airplane pilot to fly them above and around the canyon. Thousands of people every year choose to explore the Grand Canyon by boat from the Colorado River. These trips last 1 to 3 weeks.
Most people who come to the Grand Canyon National Park visit an area known as the South Rim. That area has shuttle buses that take visitors to overlooks. Fewer people see the canyon from the North Rim. The North Rim is less than 20 kilometers across the canyon from the South Rim, but visitors must drive more than 350 kilometers by car from the South Rim to access the North Rim. Visitors can also see the Grand Canyon from a huge glass walkway called the Skywalk. The Skywalk is on the Hualapai Indian Reservation in the western part of the canyon. The Hualapai Indians built it to increase tourism at the reservation. It opened in 2007. The Skywalk extends more than 20 meters from the canyon's rim. It is suspended more than 1,200 meters above the bottom of the canyon and is shaped like a giant horseshoe. Many call the Skywalk an engineering wonder, but others have criticized the Skywalk and its development. They say it reduces the enjoyment of nature in the Grand Canyon. For visitors hoping to get a view of the entire Grand Canyon, they will have to travel well beyond the state of Arizona. The only place to see the entire canyon at once is from outer space.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.